as I we mentioned that this is work on water quality, mostly really phosphorus, and I'll present some data on total suspended solids also in the L40 canal, which is the perimeter canal of the National Wildlife Refuge in South Florida. As you all know, that the Everglades is the largest subtropical wetland. It has evolved as a low nutrient in a low nutrient environment, and it's unique as a lot of the organic matter accumulation, of course, is over a limestone depression. So historically, the nutrient sources to the Everglades has been from rainfall and maybe from sheet flow. But afterwards, you know, with the agriculture, quite a bit of the phosphorus, as you all know, comes from ag and urban areas. So South Florida environment, again, as you most of you know, is quite complicated with the way water flows from the Kissimmee Basin to Lake Okeechobee. Quite a bit of the flow from Lake Okeechobee, whether it's, you know, when they set the elevation, of course, there is a dam, goes either to St. Lucie River or the Coosawhatchie River, but about one-third of the load comes from the lake into the Everglades agricultural area. Let me see the pointer. Yeah. And water flows from the farms of the Everglades agricultural area towards the storm treatment areas here, and I'll show them in a little while. We're going to talk about STA 1 East in details, eventually to the water conservation areas and the park itself. So this talk will focus on the refuge, which is the Loxahatchee National Wild Refuge, and of course, it's what WCA1 and STA 1 East. Oh, sure.
We're all family.
This is so funny. Thank you. Yeah. So, yeah, for the map, it's much better. Of course, there is concerns about water quality going into the water drainage water going into the Everglades, because there's quite a bit of floats nowadays, either from, you know, the Everglades agricultural area here with a lot of sugarcane farms and vegetable farms and sod and other type of farming. A lot of urban areas also, of course, discharge, and you have water going into the southern ecosystems. So because of the concerns about water quality in the area, the Everglades Forever Act in 1994 was enacted, and the regulatory program established the BMPs in the Everglades agricultural area. Every farmer in the EAA has to implement BMPs, and it has reduced the phosphorus quite a bit, the phosphorus loads going out of the farms. But in addition, the state of Florida has also, in the South Florida Water Management District, has all of these storm treatment areas to further up clean the water, basically. And I know Curtis talked about STAs this morning, but the STAs are different in the way they're performing. Water year 2009 was not too bad. STA 1 East gets a lot of phosphorus inflow. The concentration is about 182 parts per billion, and the outflow this year was 21, so it's really getting a bit stabilized. But I don't think it's hitting less than 20, and it's about 88% reduction. So this project came about when personnel from the Fish and Wildlife Service were concerned about the drainage flow from the STA 1 East. So when this came online, STA 1 East came online in August 2004, and they knew there can be drainage flows in different capacities, they were concerned about what is the impact of this drainage flow on the sediments in the L40 canal. Basically, the L40 canal had historically got a lot of discharge from before, so it has quite a bit of organic sediments, a lot of high phosphorus content sediments in this perimeter canal. And the sediments, especially the top sediments, are light, they're susceptible to resuspension and transport during flow condition. There's a lot of organic P, but there's also iron pound phosphorus, which of course can be mobilized under different redox potentials. So they wanted to know what is the impact of the different drainage outflows, you know, with transport and mobilization of phosphorus into the wetlands. Would the sediments move? Would the phosphorus move? Would it impact the inside of the refuge? But the refuge itself and the South Florida Water Management District really monitors the inside of the refuge, and they just wanted to know what happens in the L40 canal. So the objectives of this study were to study the impact of the intensity and the frequency of the discharges on total phosphorus and total suspended solid concentrations, also look at the trends. We monitored it for 3 years and eventually assess the impact on the refuge water quality. So what we did is we had 12 sampling locations, 3 above and 9 below structure S36-2, the discharge structure here, which STA1E discharges from this structure. We had grab water samples collected almost every month. We tried to time it when there's flow out of STA1E. And eventually, when we analyzed the data, we divided it into 4 categories: no flow, low, medium, and high flow conditions. We analyzed the water samples for total phosphorus and all of these parameters like total dissolved and soluble reactive and particulate. But most of the data I'm going to talk about today is total phosphorus and total suspended solid concentrations. We had a poster about total dissolved phosphorus and all these fractions and how it was affected by flow and season, but it was yesterday. We also looked at STA1E, what comes into the STA in terms of flow and concentration, what comes out of it from the South Florida Water Management District, DB Hydro. We analyzed the data by water year and also by season. We did a repeated measure, ANOVA analysis, basically. And water year, for those of you who are not from South Florida, for example, water year 2007, the wet season starts in May, so it would be the data from May 1st, 06 to April 30, 07. Okay. So we did this for 3 water years, water year 07, 08, and 09. Water year 07 was fairly wet year, and all of these points, so this is the total discharge, the blue line, and we tried to get samples during the discharge. Water year 08 was a fairly dry year, and 09 was kind of wet also. I want to first start with the STA and how is it getting, you know, these, how well it's doing in reducing the concentration of phosphorus and the loads of phosphorus. So this is actually time-wise from the start of the operation of STA1E, from August 04 till February 09. This is total phosphorus loads in kilograms and also the flow in acre foot. The solid line is the inflow in terms of drainage and flow of water, and the green line is the outflow. And it's pretty much the same except for some points here. They probably dried it down for some reason, I'm not really sure. But the loads are in the bars. The purple bar is the load that comes out of it, and the yellow one is the outflow load. And as you can tell, there's quite a bit of reduction in the load coming out, which is amazing sometimes because some loads, you know, with the high water, it can be substantial. So as you can tell, this is concentration of phosphorus outflow, so what comes out of the STA. And it is being stabilized quite a bit. When it first started, it had very high concentrations, and I think it's a lot of sediments probably moving along, having all these spikes. We had very high numbers here still in water year 07 due to the impact of the hurricane seasons from 04 and 05, so there was quite a bit of high concentration still. But I would say after this date, it is stabilized quite a bit, you know, kind of settled down. So looking at our data, first we looked at the effect of drainage flow on total phosphorus in the L40 canal. This is kind of a busy slide, but I'm going to point out some important features that I want you to look at. So what we have here is the distance from the discharge, the S362, so the 12 sampling locations, and total phosphorus on the y-axis, water year 07, 08, and 09. I actually want to start first with 08 and 09 because it's much simpler to describe. The blue bars are the no-flow conditions. And as you can see in both 07 and 09, we had the highest concentration of phosphorus under no-flow conditions. there's also a gradient, and that's expected. You know, you see the highest total phosphorus concentrations near the discharge, and then it kind of levels off, basically. Now, under no flow condition, there is a couple of things that could be happening. Sometimes, if there's no flow for a period of time, there's a lot of sediments accumulating, and there's a flux of phosphorus from these sediments into the water column. So that explains it. When we look at the no flow condition, the low flow, which is discharge between the first and the 50th percentile, as we analyze the data, it's interesting to see there is an actual increase. And you can see that also in the Water 2007 data also, but mostly in 08 and a little bit in 09. I speculate that this is, most of it is sediments and particulate phosphorus moving with the flow, and you can see this increase eventually. Under high flow, lower phosphorus concentrations, I would also speculate that most of the phosphorus, especially in terms of particulate phosphorus, probably has moved downward at this point when we grab the samples. So highest peak concentrations under no flow, probably a lot of flux from the sediments, and then things are moving down the L40 canal, basically, towards the southern ecosystems. In water year 2007, again, you see this gradient. The highest concentrations were in the no flow. You see this gradient, it levels off, but basically a lot of higher concentration compared to 08 and 09. And as I said, 07, they were still dealing with the effects of the hurricanes, and you know, we had higher concentrations all over. But definitely there's kind of a decreasing trend as you move on with the distance from the discharge. I threw in this slide. As I said, we had detailed information in the poster, but this is total dissolved phosphorus, particulate phosphorus, and soluble reactive. And really the highest fraction of what we see in total phosphorus is the particulate phosphorus. So under no flow conditions, this is no flow in water year 2007, 2008, 2009, and under low flow, but I mean, in normally in all of them, the particulate phosphorus was the highest fraction. Looking now at the effect of season, again, distance from the discharge, total phosphorus, we compiled the data into wet season and dry season, so the solid line is the wet season, and this is water year 2007, and here you can see the gradient, you know, the leveling off after the distance, definitely much higher concentration in the wet season compared to the dry season. But in the next years, water years 08 and 09, levels, concentration of phosphorus has decreased quite a bit. We don't see anything lower than, I want to say 15 or 16, but that's really going at the end of the L40 canal. The total suspended solid concentrations follow the same trend in terms of leveling off after a distance. This is with the no flow, low flow, medium, and high, again with the water year, total suspended solids. It's interesting, again, water year 2007 is so strange. I'm going to talk about 08 and 09 first. And you can see the highest TSS is under the no flow, which again tells me that the sediments are there and they're fluxing the phosphorus into the water column. And it levels off, you know, after you move away from the discharge structure. But under the other flow conditions, the TSS decreases tremendously compared to the no flow. But there seems to be a bit of a trend of increasing, which I can speculate also that some of these sediments have moved down the L40 canal. In water year 2007, I mean, the trend is the same, but I can see high TSS in the no flow and the medium flow. The trend is the same, so I really cannot explain what's going on in 07 quite a bit. Oops. We took, also, I just wanted to see what is, in terms of the data from the Fish and Wildlife Service and the water management district, because as I said, we monitored around the L40 canal, inside the canal itself, but the district has monitoring points inside the refuge, just at the perimeters of the El-Forti Canal. This is the station ID, total phosphorus in micrograms per liter, and the highest concentrations you'll see very close to the discharge structures. So 101 is here, and then this 136 is close to the S36-2. And as you go along, it decreases. But definitely there are higher concentrations closer to the discharge structures. And some of the points inside the refuge itself, again, higher numbers of concentrations near the discharge structure, and it levels off. It decreased quite a bit as you go along the refuge. So in conclusion, and we're still working on this report and getting the final report out and doing more of the statistical analysis, but it seems, and I'm going to focus mostly on 08 and 09 data water years because they seem to be a bit more consistent, but it seems the water quality is a function of the intensity and the frequency of the drainage. As we have seen, you know, under no-flow conditions, you'll have sediments accumulating. There is sediments over there, and they're fluxing the phosphorus. Higher concentrations in the wet season, and that is expected. But as we move along with time, in water year 08 and 09, we had a stabilization of the SCA1 East, and the water quality has improved quite a bit. The interior of the refuge, at least at the parameters, seems to be impacted, but as we go inside the refuge, it's definitely less impacted. But I think there is an impact of these sediments and this higher phosphorus concentration and the flux of phosphorus from these sediments, perhaps especially when we have flooding from the El-Forti Canal into the refuge, that it's having this gradient and higher concentrations very close to the El-Forti Canal. And this is it. Thank you.
Well, we'd like to thank the speaker for an informative presentation, so we'd like to take some questions.
Yes.
So, there, when I was working down there, there was several studies that looked like you continued this. The canals may be acting, they're not out of the STA, but they're acting as a settling area.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have any, it looks like when the water is still, you're getting more phosphorus back in the water column.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you know how much sediment, there was even a talk one time, they're going to dredge the canals and take that and put it back on the farmland. Do you have
I don't have data, but I know the Fish and Wildlife Service has some kind of data that there is a lot of sediments that have accumulated. I don't believe, they dredged some of it, but I don't believe the whole thing was dredged, no.
But there is a buildup.
There is a buildup, and also, we stopped collecting data in April of this year. Afterwards, we got so much rainfall, and there was a lot of discharge from the STA, and you can see the numbers shooting up again. So once, you know, under long-time quiescent conditions, once they start discharging from the STA, a lot of this fluffy material that is in the STAs is discharged, and you can see those spikes.
So I was just to finish up on that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the STAs are doing one thing, and if they have enough long enough canal, they may be giving a different type of settling treatment.
Right, right. So I think the danger or the concern was very high velocity that would move these sediments. But if they're discharging, and most of the time they're discharging at low velocity, it may be better because eventually, you know, it will go back into particulate phosphorus, it will settle down and hopefully, you know, be compacted and not very fluffy material. I know, but it's there, you know, and eventually it will change. It will be taken up by plants. It will change into a particulate phosphorus form, you know. It's just hard to follow the data, what happens to it with season, but there is always like a cyclic things in terms of SRP and particulate phosphorus and what have you, yeah, yeah. But I think under drainage flow, it may just move where we cannot see it, but I don't know where it's exactly going. Yes.
I noticed that at the end, or it was at the end, but we were talking about the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And the standard deviations are kind of large on those.
The season, yeah.
Right there. No.
I get two slides past that.
Okay. Yeah. Past? Before?
Next one.
go back or?
Towards the end.
Oh, towards the end. These ones?
No, this one.
Right there.
Oh, well, these are not my data. This is from the Fish and Wildlife. I think they sometimes they see excursions like very high phosphorus concentrations, and I truly believe sometimes it's whatever comes out of the STA when eased, because sometimes you have big slugs things coming. It was kind of amazing after the rains in May and June that we got the concentrations coming out, because they have this light sediments that moves with the water when they discharge it.
So these locations were, you were measured in the canal?
I measured in the canal. These are the sites that they have them on the edge. They're inside the refuge. They're not in the canal.
Right. So maybe somebody should go along the edge of the canal and maybe go a little bit into the interior and look at the total phosphorus of the soil. So that would tell you stuff building up there over time.
Well, I want to say Sue Newman is doing something like that, but I don't know if she's talking. We took sediments from the L40 canal. We haven't analyzed it completely yet, but we only measured it, like, at the end,
yeah.
You know, not in between, because it's just a...
Okay. I've taken measurements along the edge, and Bill Patrick took measurements along there, and it does, there's a buildup from the edge.
There is a buildup, yeah.
Especially those lightning, they're not going to move very far.
No, and the rim... got quite a bit, in fact, several on the other side too. It's that gradient that I talked about this morning.
Exactly. And the Fish and Wildlife Service people were really concerned about discharges from the STAs and what could happen, you know, eventually if it continues. But the numbers from STA 1 East are getting lower and lower, but you think these sediments will then, when going back to the equilibrium phosphorus concentration, you will have a flux from the sediments, because when you're doing lower concentration water, I mean, that would happen. Exactly, yeah.
We're also running a few papers reviewing things like that, and it comes down sometimes to a lot of criticism people get where they sampled in the canal.
Okay.
And so were you sampling like a water column sample? I know you said you did it in the middle, right, which is always better than the edge.
Joseph, okay, he could talk to the boat. And
we did the grab samples in the middle of the canal.
In the middle.
What water depth versus how deep these things are?
Oh, generally, it's like the way we did it, we have like about 1 to 2 feet, that's it. Yeah.
So are there going to be level particulates maybe further down?
You know, when Jim Stock was working with me, we did this, like, it was so much trouble to explain the data, because it's quite variable, yeah, if you go by depth. And sometimes choose a depth and stick to it, you know, because there was quite a bit of variability and it's really hard to figure out what's going on. Yeah.
USGS would say about 2/3 of the depth of water, one-third or two-thirds.
Yeah, and we tried to take the same location again and again. I don't know if that made a difference or not, but we had GPS location, so we took it from the same location each time. Yeah. Yes, monsieur.
And the other thing is when you take a water sample, if the total phosphorus, you include all the particles in the water sample?
Say that again.
When you take the grab sample, is it a lot of the particles in the water sample?
Sometimes you see a lot of particles, yeah.
When you do analysis, are you separating the particles or just do...
No, we did total phosphorus, we did particulate phosphorus, SRP, total... So we separate, I mean, we filter by 45 micron filter, you know. So it's the standard procedure to do the different, you know. So we just assume anything that passes the filter is dissolved phosphorus. No, for TP, we digest everything. We don't filter.
But with the particles?
With the particles, whatever there is there. I mean, there's no way to subjectively say, this is a big particle, I should toss it away. I mean, the particles are like sediments or soil. I doubt that like there's floating plant material. I don't think so. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like I said, some of the TP, even in, supposed to be no filter, but...
We don't filter, yeah.
They still have a certain way, because if you got a lot of particle inside, you when you're taking down the sample, they're already in the bottom. And the methodology, actually, is 365.1, it doesn't really digest the particle. So when you're digesting with the particle, you will still come out with the black particle in
Well, actually, we don't do a persulfate digestion in my lab. We do a mercury digestion, and that digests everything. And that's different from the persulfate, because we've did some comparison of the two methods. And the persulfate sometimes does not digest everything there. I mean, you'll see the color still there. And that's one of the issues that I haven't switched the persulfate method yet. So we still do mercury digestion, which is, you know, NELAC certified and what have you. But it digests everything. And, I mean, this is the protocol we follow, and I didn't deviate from it, yeah.
But you raise a good point, because one of the big controversies in the whole measurement
system, like you have so, yeah,
10 years was... Certain people would say, well, what do you do with those particles? How you sample, especially in the
okay.
interior.
Yeah.
Some people, the district sample said, we won't sample.
Because there's so much suspended stuff, yeah.
People argue, well, you tell me all the organisms aren't getting anything when it's this deep. They're living in this still yeah. real phosphorus.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's the highest phosphorus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So some people pre-screen with like a gauze.
Ah.
100.
Okay.
Take that off and
okay.
Say, this is a large coarse particle. So the phosphorus chemistry, I didn't go into today, was a huge disparity among different laboratories. Not wrong,
mm-hmm.
just doing
yeah.
slightly different analysis.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, the L4D canal is pretty deep. So, I mean, I don't think you'll find a lot of these bigger particles, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's a deep canal. We go on a boat.
The particles. If you got the particle in this sample,
yeah, it will be. Yeah, it will shoot up. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Samir, if you're still working on this, one of the things I might suggest is we have the concentrations with the high flow, and the low flow,
mm-hmm.
the middle flow, and all that stuff. You might want to multiply the concentration by the discharge, and just get the total volume of phosphorus, because I think the numbers will even be a lot larger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still working on the data, basically, so...
But
we'll,
you have the discharge numbers, or some of the district would, right?
Yes,
yeah,
yeah, from DB Hydro.
Yeah,
you can give, yeah.
You know, one of the things, I not familiar with the situation in Florida, when you mentioned, I think you showed some data for total suspended
solid
in the no flow.
Right.
So how does that?
Well,
how do we define no flow? That is what I don't get.
The no flow is defined when there was from S362 discharge site. When
in the last 24 hours.
No flow means the gates were closed, but there was no flow. But it does not mean that the activity of the flow, which was happened 24 hours ago or 40 hours ago, can still impact the canal. So at the time you take the sample, we look at the deb hydro and see, okay, whether if there any flow happening. So if it was not happening, then we go and take the sample, mostly dry seasons.
Yeah.
But it was very interesting that under no flow condition.
Yeah.
So you expect that, okay, your TSS should be less, but
yeah.
We are not.
Yeah, this was not our hypothesis. I didn't talk about that because I expected things to be the reverse. But I think in our sampling, we're missing what were happening like every single day because we're only sampling once a month and we're trying to get the flow, but sometimes it just happens and then you go the second day and things have moved along, you know, especially with the high flow. So we can only speculate of what might be going on, but we still have to analyze quite a bit of data to figure that out, yeah. I didn't expect to have high TSS in no flow conditions, but I don't know.
You also have wind effects. A lot of sampling we would do day after day sampling, if it had a really big wind source, the wind,
mm-hmm.
is especially some of these waters, you'd be amazed how the
yeah.
turbulence.
I mean, even the boat moving, yeah.
The boat moving, and
yeah.
all of this causes.
Yeah.
Especially when there is no flow, means there is no rain or anything like that, then the people, they come boating so many over there.
And they go boating in there. Either.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's used for recreation also, the L40 canal. So, you see a lot of boaters there.
So that can completely disturb your canal. So,
I'm done.
Okay.
Well, thank you for the wonderful comments, because
so
I need to
really,
work on
really,
this paper.
Really interesting.